This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
You're tuning in to the online broadcast network, AfterBuzz TV. Over 20 million weekly downloads in over 150 countries and your number one source for after-show entertainment. TV, the destination for TV superfans, producing aftershows for over 300 of your favorite TV shows, interviewing celebrities and showrunners, and bringing you behind-the-scenes exclusives. All thanks to E! Entertainment's Maria Menounos, producer Kevin Undergaro, and internet leader Akamai. Now, let the buzz begin!
Oh, we want the lyrics.
We did get the lyrics. I didn't ask for it.
Oh,
but this is the movie.
One of my favorite movies of all time.
Welcome to the Blacklist. Not MASH, but welcome to the Blacklist AfterBuzz After Show. You're listening to the theme song from MASH, which is called Suicide is Painless. In honor of... Oh. I never heard these lyrics.
It brings on many changes.
What the hell is going on? Why don't I know this?
You know what I'm saying?
All right. Wait, Lemieux, did you know this? You're too young for this.
Know what?
Did you know this, that there were lyrics to the MASH theme song?
I didn't know there were lyrics to it.
Wow.
That's crazy. The TV show
did not have lyrics.
Yeah, but I don't know. I was not thinking. Oh, okay. The Robert Altman movie? We're in the wrong podcast.
Okay.
Again, back. Welcome to Blacklist After Buzz After Show. We're playing it because in honor of the great Alan Alda, Fitch,
yes.
who met his end in another wonderful finale. The MASH finale was rated one of the highest finales of all time back in the day, and this was the fall finale of the Blacklist, so Alan Alda is the king of finales.
You know, I have seen every single MASH episode except for the finale, and
what?
It kills my soul. How? I keep watching,
you know,
they
have
taping
things
them.
Like DVDs.
Yeah, I want it to come to me, though, like by chance on TV. Anyways.
Oh, it's going to be flipping on TNT.
It's
the finale.
They don't
rerun it like that.
Oh, my God.
Again, we're in the wrong podcast. I'm Joe Braswell. I'm here, joined, as always, by my main man, Nando Velasquez.
Well, thank you.
Main man.
And my main gal, Julia Carey.
Your main little lady. Hello.
Yes,
hello. Hi, everybody.
Not joined by the very handsome Joe Sanfilippo, who is in Italy. He's in the motherland. He's in the old country.
Yes, he is.
I'm sure he's listening and watching. Joe.
Ciao, Joe.
Ciao, Bella.
Ciao, Bella.
Hey, I'm in Italy. I'm Joe Flippo. Boom. That's exactly.
It's
pizza pie in Italy.
Pie.
That's exactly how Joe Flippo sounds.
When he's in Italy.
He's going to love that. we're here covering the Blacklist episode. What episode is this? This is known as the fall finale.
Oh, yes. That, did we?
Don't miss.
Oh,
do not turn away.
Episode eight.
Thank you.
The Decemberist.
Now,
yes. Who is number 12?
Number 12.
That's very high up.
That's way up there.
And it's Fitch.
It's Alan Alda.
It's Fitch. It's way up. So, a couple things. Number one, I'm going to get your impressions, but I just want to get off the top. This was a great episode. This is one of my favorite all-time Blacklist episodes.
Yeah.
It's an all-timer. Like, the pilot was an all-timer for me. And I think this is an all-timer. I love this one.
Well, this answered a lot of questions.
It answered a lot of questions.
This was the most satisfying Blacklist I have ever seen.
It was good. It was very, and I'm very, and kudos to John Bolkenkamp and the game for giving us some GD answers. I keep saying this, but they pretty much reset the table to stop this thing. We got eight episodes in, and we're here. We've got a lot of answers. We pretty much tidied everything up.
Well, yeah, usually the fall finales for some of these shows, and I believe last year's fall finale ends on somewhat of a cliffhanger.
Yeah,
or some
enough
major
of those already.
So I really like. There's a lot of resolution in this, and we still have a lot of questions to be answered. This actually didn't feel like a fall finale. This felt like a real May finale.
It felt like a proper finale. And I think it's really interesting. Just more of a television business note. I mean, you know, back in our day, Nando, they didn't have fall finales.
They just had reruns.
And they had, you know, everything else. But it's really like the fact that they can get through these episodes, now they can plan for this fall finale and write story to lead up to this.
You know what the show is that's credited for the fall finale?
What? 24?
Walking Dead.
Walking Dead, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
You think about it, Walking Dead is actually, not that, that it's the only show that had a hiatus from November, let's say, to January,
right,
but it's the one that took advantage of it because they didn't want The Walking Dead to conflict, because it's a Sunday night show,
right,
with the NFL playoffs.
Yes, well, that makes sense.
So they ended up making an arc that would end. This is really more of a more recent thing. I mean, people can text me and message me and say there's some other exceptions, but really The Walking Dead is the one that really took advantage of the Fox
finale. I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
I do know programming-wise, is the idea that there's room to get in. Like, this
That's
is a good opportunity for them to premiere their.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's kazoo concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's bachelorette bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
New show, the Catherine Heigl show. What's it called?
State of Affairs.
So they're going to slot this right into this Blacklist slot.
Joy.
Which we're not covering.
The creators of the Blacklist.
I've done a 180 on this show. I've done a 90
on State
degree.
State of Affairs?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm actually going to watch. I'm in for the pilot.
Let me know how it goes.
Okay.
They promoed me to death. They beat me down with these promos.
Text me all about it.
Okay. All right. I can tell you're all in. I'm gonna give it a shot. But anyway, show is great. It ended in the fall finale. It allows the showrunners to write up into a certain point. I love the fact that most of these guys, like you said, Nando, do a cliffhanger or something.
Yeah.
Enough cliffhangers. Like, we have a lot of story. We have a lot of individual things.
So many questions.
I like the fact that they're just clearing the decks. We talked about this last week with our good friend Amir, about how in the Ansel Garrick episodes, they did a lot of like house cleaning and did some things in last season.
Mm-hmm.
And then at the Berlin, you know, part one and two, they did some more house cleaning and cleaning things up. And now we feel like this whole arc, this whole eight episodes, it was just sort of like tidying up all the loose ends and then still creating. We still have our ongoing threads, but, you know, I'm pretty satisfied.
I feel like it was all worth it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I've said over and over on this podcast that I get really frustrated sometimes. Like,
sure,
it's just layer after
I'm
layer.
Sorry,
and question,
Julia,
and question.
I apologize for frustrating you.
Uh-oh.
Well, that's a whole other story. Let's not get into that.
Guys, just do it already. Oh, sorry.
He said it.
Okay. I'm sorry, Julia. I meant, you know, shake hands already. There are the crickets.
Here we go.
Oh, man. This is like moonlighting. It's like Bruce Willis and Cybill Shepherd.
That's why we can never get together, because it would just go downhill from there, just like moonlighting.
That's the reason.
I like you guys.
Attention the way it is.
Wow, I'm really glad that you laid it out there. That's
like
the reason.
A, for you guys to stay friends. B, I don't want to upset my other good friend, your husband.
That guy I married.
Good friend Eric Kearley.
Anywho, we digress. The Blacklist show.
Anyway, so you get frustrated. Let's talk about that.
All right. So you're saying
you get frustrated.
I'm flustered. I've been frustrated by this show for just layering, and never answering any questions, never tying any loose ends. Or they try to, but in doing so, it feels fake because they just throw in shit ton of other questions at me.
Right.
So this felt, like I said before, really satisfying. It felt tight. And I just feel like I was able to just sigh a breath of relief afterwards. And now I'm really looking forward to seeing what comes next.
Yeah. And I'm totally fine with waiting until the big Super Bowl premiere episode that we now know, directed by Joe Carnahan, part one and two, that Amir, good friend Amir, Arison told us. And, I'm excited for that.
Me too.
I'm totally fine. I got Catherine Heigl tied me over. What do you think of this episode, Nando?
I love this episode. I mean, I've said, you know, questions being answered. Some house being clean. I'm a little sad to see a couple of characters gone.
Sure.
You know? But they played it so well. It was well played by both Peter Stormare and Alan Alda.
Yeah.
You know, playing Berlin and Fitch. Really, really good job. We finally get to see Tom on the loose.
Yeah.
So that's like a big, that's kind of big.
I got an announcement to make about Tom, too.
Oh, you got an announcement?
Yeah, you might like it. I'll save it for a second.
But we get to see Tom on the loose. So yeah, we're moving forward. And ultimately, I think, you know, there have been a lot of you even see it in the comments, and we've seen it in other boards, just the conversation about that photo that Red has. It was a really good explanation for all of this, it turns out. And I really love, you know, this is what we said. I mean, we still don't know if the main relationship is father-daughter between Red and Lizzie, although I have some thoughts about that from this episode. But at least the question about Zoe and that photo that Red had for a while, and that was his
daughter. From the Stewmaker and the whole thing.
Yeah, all the way back. He even referenced the Stewmaker and everything. I mean,
we even got a Gina Zanatacos reference.
And we even got a Gina Zanatacos reference.
Yeah, where's Flippo? Flippo, Gina Zanatacos.
I know.
Their favorite name of all time.
Yeah,
of all television.
So we got a lot of callbacks, and things are making sense. That completely made sense to me. That was my big fear, that, you know, as we get more and more complex, that it gets harder and harder to write yourself out of this hole.
I totally agree.
I thought it was really, really understandable.
Well, good. Yeah, you can write yourself in this big hole, but then clear the decks, and then guess what? Yeah. Your writers and your creatives make a new story. Like, give us some more stuff to be intrigued with.
Absolutely.
And I think it's good. I really, one of the things I highlighted, aside from just, you know, the story itself being great, I think the acting again was fantastic. We talked about last week about Spader's sort of monologuing, his ability to tell these great monologues. We also talked about how he's great at reacting as well. Both those scenes, the scene with him and Fitch, was a fantastic scene. They had two great scenes. The first initial scene where he confronted Fitch, which was great, which we'll talk about later, but which was a really great scene between two great actors. And then again, when Fitch was just about to get, his head exploded, if you will.
Yeah.
That was a great scene between the two men. And then that last scene between Berlin and Red.
And Red.
With the bottle of vodka.
I will add the Tom scene at the very end, too.
Also very good.
Yes,
also very
I would
good.
Add that scene, too.
We'll get into this episode, but I'll give my Tom announcement now, because we're going to talk about Tom and Lizzie and how the episode started. I'm in on Tom. I'm back. I'm back. I love Tom Keene.
That's your announcement?
I you know what? I was so hard on him. And his sweaters and his Dawson's Creek. And his Dawson's Creek and Julia was saying he's so dreamy.
There we go.
He's got the beard and he's driving the Mustang and he's in that.
And I was like, just awesome.
Whatever. And then guess what happened to me? I fell in love. I fell in love with dreamy Tom. I really think Ryan Eggel did a great job. Like, with
the looks aside, the dude is awesome.
Oh, looks aside, yeah. No. He was. No, he did. Listen. The character was great. Will develop. I'm really very interested in the Tom character, and sort of like his background. In addition to the way he handled that whole situation, I'm very, very interested. I was wrong. My prediction was wrong about him sort of like getting information. But as we saw at the end, there is some secrets there. He was working with Red, and he was sort of seemed to be manipulating Lizzie to a certain degree. But I just really love this sort of wild card that Tom is, as an addition to the show. I'm really curious to see now he's out of the sweaters and the glasses and the furrowed brow, or whatever. Like I like to see him out doing stuff. I'm really in on it. I'm very happy, and he's dreamy.
You buried the lead there. That's you just think he's dreamy. Dressed up for him.
I did.
You totally
so your announcement about Tom Keene is that you now like Tom Keene.
Tom Keene is dreamy.
That is thrilling.
Well, I like Tom. I like Ryan. I like all the thing about it. There it is. What do you think? It's coming in. My announcement. Did I get you excited?
My heart was a little
My announcement
flutter.
Is.
Tune in for his announcement about.
Come on in, Tom.
Yeah, there you go.
Come on in, Santa Julia. No. But Tom and Lindsay, we did get a. So we open with a great flashback, and we sort of got some of our answers about what happened to Tom and Lizzie. Again, more answers, an episode of answers. I was a little, you're making a face, Nando, over there. I thought it was a little, still a little loose, loosey goosey.
It didn't show how she snuck him out or how she, other than the fact that apparently Red left because there were police around or something. He said she just put him in the back of a car, and
she called in a favor from a doctor friend.
She called in a couple of favors. So yeah, we did see that,
right.
and she did give some information about Monarch, about the Monarch Bank, because that was the first reference to the
source,
I believe. So they did tie up a few of those things fairly
quickly.
They
did find because remember there was a whole bit about he has a relationship with Gina Zanatacos.
Mm-hmm.
We're like, where about that? So she was able to sort of bring that back in.
Yeah,
because that was a loose end that was still kind of floating out there that the internet was talking about. What about Tom and Gina? So
he didn't really mention much on that. But.
But at least they had to drop the name in a montage to make it be like, oh, okay, there's something there.
They're talking about
And we also got to see how her methods. I mean, it wasn't actually outright torture or beatdowns, but it was deprivation. It was, the prevention of treatment. At one point, he had an infection, so that was somewhat believable. right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. No, it's
okay. Brilliant. I bought it. Mm-hmm. I bought it. And I'm leading all the way up to it. Even they've explained even the bodyguard guy and what he was doing there. But what I really liked about this whole situation is him calling her out ultimately on the fact that she can't kill him. And we see that at the end of the show where she has to confess to Red that like, and to, you know, she's still in love with him and this was the deal and blah, blah, blah. I thought that was a really interesting arc for Lizzie as a character, because I don't know if I was buying this whole, you know, tough gal Lizzie, or like, you know, I wasn't buying it, but now to see this actual thing that I still love this guy and I'm working this thing out and trying to reconcile this, I kind of bought that.
We haven't gotten any little iota of emotion from Lizzie, I feel like, from this first half of the season. We just see her being badass, being focused, having Tom locked up, being all about the job and all about this vendetta to get Berlin because he killed her friends.
Right.
So to see that there is actually something behind that emotionally, I think it was about time that we saw that.
Sure.
You know, somebody on the YouTube comments from last week brought up a good point, not in reference to this, but just reminded me, Zone Fighter 1, I figure I'll call them out because okay. I have it in front of me, just reminded about that one episode when Lizzie was getting treated by that psychiatrist, the one with the warrior gene. I can't remember his name right now.
Oh, yeah. Linus. Dr. Creel.
Yeah, Dr. Creel. And he, you know, he pretty much, I don't know if they staged it necessarily, but they made it seem like she had the warrior gene.
Right.
I think if anything, though, you know, the Zone Fighter 1 was mentioning this in reference to something else, but I think if anything, this episode proves maybe she doesn't have it, because she wouldn't kill the Harbor Master. She wouldn't kill Tom, which we figured, you know, she still has some feelings for him,
right.
But she wouldn't even kill the Harbor Master.
Well, she also has, she has her duties as an FBI agent.
That's part of it, but she's already going rogue on this. She's already... You know.
She's in over her head, as Tom said.
And back to Tom, I mean, you know, that whole him killing the Harbor Master was pretty brutal. That was actually, you know, take it easy over there.
Yeah.
It was,
no.
Freaking believable.
No, but it was very much, it gave him some depth, gave him some three dimensions, it gave him the much needed edge. Because I wasn't really buying his edge until he killed her and what he was saying, and the beard wasn't doing it for me. So I'm you know, like I said.
He also had to put Lizzie in that spot because he knows her, and he knows that she can't go through with something like that.
Yeah.
So to do it for her, in front of her, with her as a witness, and create this chaos that she just can't get out of,
very smart.
Was a necessary move on his part.
Well, yeah, now he just killed someone in front of her. Now is he a fugitive that she, you know, did not bring into justice, but now she's witnessing him killing somebody.
Yeah.
So I think it's an awesome move on his part there.
Yes. So it was well done. I think that
poor Harbor Master, though. I really felt for him the whole time.
His phone was ringing.
No, he's such a nice... He seemed like a nice guy even in the beginning.
He's just trying to do his job and see what's going on.
He got a little too nosy.
Ugh.
Poor Harbor Master. I know.
I like to see a web series, The Harbor Master. The early years. Just give him a shot.
Someone must really be caring about
him. He's solving crimes up there in the harbor. He's I'm sure he's good.
Do the Harbor Masters too?
I don't know.
Okay.
In my world, they do. Okay. My world, they solve crimes in the harbor. But I did like that way the whole thing played out. And then, of course, but I also did like, we knew that Red was kind of like suspicious the whole time. But that confrontation between Red and Lizzie when he finally calls her out and was like, look, Tom's alive. She's like, Tom's alive. Cut the crap. He's alive. But we don't have time to talk about that now. We need his intel. So go get intel from him, because I got to get Berlin. You know, and I like that. And it felt the way he handled it did feel a little fatherly. It felt very fatherly, like, you know, I'm not going to get you in trouble now. You know, I'm not going to reprimand you now. We have things to do. I love that little scene. I love the way he played that. I mean, that was neat.
Yeah, I agree.
So we saw that, and then we, the confrontation, and then once Tom was out, and this whole notion of Tom, this is another thing I really loved about this episode, the whole, I'm skipping down to this, but the whole, like, love triangle potential between Tom and Wrestler, like, jealous Wrestler.
That was interesting, wasn't it? Yeah.
And Wrestler we know as sort of a no-nonsense tough guy, and Tom, who we sort of thought is like a sweater-wearing non-tough guy, but Tom badass coming out. I love that. I love the three of them in the car talking. I thought that was really cool. I mean, would you?
No, I thought that. I'm glad we were bringing that up because I definitely thought that was really, really interesting when Wrestler even told Lizzie, you know, that Tom is not the same as Red. You know, think of Tom as an informant, but Tom's not the same as Red because you're not in love with Reddington.
He's right.
Saying,
you know,
that was obviously a little bit of a dig.
I was a little jealous.
You bring your boyfriend along.
Yeah, I loved all that.
Yeah, I love it too.
And then later
and
on,
Lizzie's like, guys.
Guys, stop it.
We have to fund Berlin.
And then, later on, he even says, "Hey, I kind of want to talk to you about what I said in the car." So it's obvious that he knows.
Yeah.
He was a little. He pushed her buttons a little bit.
Harsh.
Yeah, a little harsh.
Well, I mean, rightfully so.
Yeah.
But I think he likes her. Doesn't want to hurt her feelings.
I think he likes her a little
Plus,
bit.
Plus, he owes her. As we touched a little, I think we touched on this last week. He owes her because she kept his secret about the
true.
Yeah.
But now that
pills,
now that he doesn't have the pills. Yeah. Well, no. Notice now that he's no pills. Now all of a sudden it's like, oh, I think I'm falling in love with you.
But she did sort of use the device that Red uses all the time, where you know you help him out a little bit, but now you have them in your pocket and you can use them when you need them. And she needed him.
The pills.
No.
Yeah, well, she...
I'm just kidding.
Give me my pills. In my pocket. I need them.
Oh, Lord.
I knew it.
Yeah, no, I just really hope we get to see it. I really hope we get to see more of that, the interaction between the three of them.
Yeah.
I really hope that Tom, whatever Tom, and we read this very clear at the end of that episode, very, very clear, do not, you know, you're done, don't go near her. What was his exact words?
Like, don't go near her again.
You were to never see her again.
Never see her again.
You know.
Just like a father would tell some guy.
Like a guy is like, I don't think you understand me.
Just like a father would tell a guy to protect his daughter.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Wonk, wonk.
Since Flippo's not here to agree with me.
All right.
Just saying it twice.
Two on the nose.
Yeah.
But we know that we have not seen the last of Tom, obviously. And,
well, not only that, because there's obviously something else there, because the last thing that Tom said was, I never told her about us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Which is really freaks me out, considering back in season one, there was that one scene even when they're sitting next to each other.
Yeah.
In, you know, outside of the hospital.
Yeah.
And neither of them are acting like they know each other.
Well, yeah, which makes you wonder if they had a past before that moment. Or
yeah, that's why it's so confusing. Because it wonders, did it have a past before that moment? Or
did their interactions come after that moment?
Well,
like after Tom was outed as a super spy Tom, maybe Red...
I find that hard to believe just because they seemed at odds of each other the way Tom was trying to throw Red, you know, under the bus to Lizzie.
And seemingly Red wanted Tom dead. Red thought Tom was dead, so there was no...
But if anything, that's proof that Tom will be back, I think, because... There's no way they're going to throw a bomb like that they had a relationship without at least bringing that relationship back in some kind of way or some story on that.
And that's proven right here on this podcast. Tom's popular, you know?
Oh, just because you like him all of a sudden. Because you had an announcement.
Two-thirds of this podcast
an announcement.
Loves Tom Keen.
Wait, I haven't.
Tom?
I haven't
I have not declared either.
You seem pretty
side
neutral on Tom Keen.
I'm pretty neutral to him.
Okay, I need you to fall on one side or the other, Tom Keen affair. So, we'll be back, and hopefully we see more of that interaction, which I liked, and Wrestler, but then we obviously also got to see Wrestler say, we've got to tell Cooper, and she said, I'll tell Cooper myself. Mm-hmm. And when it came right down to it, Wrestler dove in front of the bullet and said, you know,
It was Red.
Like, you know, in the
how chivalrous.
Oh,
because he also knows that nobody's going to go after Red the way they would have gone after Tom or anybody else.
Which was a very smart move.
Yeah, very smart move. Just blame it on Red.
Again, all of that stuff, I loved it. That's a good story.
Yeah,
that's
I loved it
really
too.
Good stuff in there. So let's shift gears and move over into the Berlin Red thing. Because, you know, the episode ended last week with Red sort of, you know, telling Berlin his daughter's alive and this is your daughter and someone's after us and who's really after us. And today yesterday we got those answers, right? We get to find out exactly who this person is, and this person was known as the Decemberist. Now let me see if I can get this right, because I'm so good at getting things wrong.
So good at being wrong
on the blacklist. So let me see if I can get this explanation right. Is that so? Apparently, there was this. So during the fall of the Soviet Union in 1991, there was a small group of about 12 sort of like loyalists who really wanted to sort of bring the Soviets back and really and sort of like really fight against the progressives. And they're meeting in the secret meeting, trying to figure out how to get the Soviet Union back to its former glory when there was an explosion and 15 of them were killed, and a lot of people were in the room, and it was later found out that...
I think 12 were killed, but 12, go ahead.
Okay, well, 12 were killed. Okay.
Yeah.
Somebody get
a bunch of dudes were killed.
It was found out that that our guy Berlin, whose real name is Milos Kirkov. Milos Kirkov.
Yes. Oh, he's relaxing in there too.
Nah. I think that so it was just found out that someone found out his daughter, that he was involved. They took his daughter and threw his daughter in the gulag. Mm-hmm. And then so allegedly someone had sent the pieces of his daughter to him, to Berlin, bone by bone. Allegedly it was red. It was not red. We know this. Blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. Question is, who was this person who ordered the hit? And it was initially thought, through all kinds of intel, we found out she thought that it was this other cat, who was the, what was his job? Secretary of Interior? He's like the transportation secretary?
He was like the financial, head of finances,
the
I believe.
Finance ministry.
The finance ministry.
Finance ministry.
Yes.
Yes. And so.
And one of Putin's most trusted advisors.
Right. And it had pictures of him with Putin and everything else. And, you know, and so, and this is what I did love. I did love the whole, like, Red Berlin tag team.
Yes.
Like them taking a trip to Russia and then going in there and the elevator scene.
Elevator of doom.
Taking her in the elevator and walking in there together. And it's like, yeah, here we are, Red in Berlin. And the one thing that just was struck this entire episode is that, you know, Red, this is the Red that we kind of thought about. In season one, we alluded to Red, this super criminal, blah, 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 super badass. And then a lot of season one was a lot of just us getting to know Red, the character, and setting up a lot of stuff. So we really didn't buy him as this ruthless guy until he shot the FBI, the justice woman at her house.
Yes. I can't remember her name right now.
Yeah, there's a couple times season one we're like, oh, Red.
Yeah, you know, after they discover she was the mole.
Yeah, yeah. So then there's afterwards, and when, of course, that in Ansel Garrick, we saw him be a badass.
When he went on the rampage.
Went on the rampage.
Killing everyone inside.
After Ansel Garrick. So, but now, this is a really cool sort of like, almost mafioso Don-like Red, who's just very cool and calm, and like watching people get killed, watching things happen, being able to kill people, and that, the whole idea of Berlin and Red side by side was a little, very cool and very terrifying to walk in the elevator. And then Berlin just to kill that guy and to keep it moving. And it was just really, really interesting. But we find out that it was not this guy at all. It was a guy named Fitch. And Yeah, a guy named Fitch who ordered the hit. And Red goes to pay him a visit, which was great.
Well, here's the thing. Berlin is pissed.
Yeah.
Berlin is pissed because obviously, you know, he went through all this stuff. And if he wasn't upset before, you know, even after Red showed the daughter, Red has given him reason to want to go after the person that was responsible for the bombing. Because he kind of reminded him about all these people that died, all his colleagues, and what they put him through, and the wild goose chase. And, you know, Berlin feels manipulated.
Well,
Meanwhile, Red is like, this is my problem now. I get to handle this. This is where we get to split up now.
Right.
Sure. It's like Red gave him the opportunity and all the means necessary to fulfill his vendetta, only to when he thinks he's done it, and he knows the next step. Now he knows the actual person who's been responsible.
And it's someone...
He goes, oh, no, you can't do that. Just kidding.
It's someone that
so
Red
he takes him this far just to say, oh, sorry, you can't touch that one.
Yeah. So, no, not Fitch.
Take it away from him. Yeah, exactly. Right. It's the one person that I guess Red can't kill for whatever reason.
Well, we kind of know because they have a deep, we have this agreement that, you know, they stay out of each other's way. Mm-hmm. Also, Red presumably has all kinds of dirt on Fitch and his people, super secret people around the world of powerful dudes. And so, so then we get that wonderful scene where Red pays Fitch a visit and, he goes, you know, Dinbe, call the florist. Which was a very cool.
That was really cool. Great realization.
Great reaction. I'm like, who's the florist? We see, you know, we saw, we know Mr. Kaplan. We've seen the torture guy who's ordering takeout. We have all these people in Red's employ. So I thought the florist was like some assassin. Like it's the florist, but it's just a signal. And it got him out. It got him out of that meeting. Like
real fast.
Yeah. So what did you think of that scene of like, you know, the Red and Alan Alda, Red and Fitch sitting down and talking, two guys, Red's got the drink. That was one of my favorite scenes in the whole show. I mean, I don't know.
Well, not only do do I enjoy that they gave so many answers up, but I just love seeing Spader and Alda go toe-to-toe and just like and acting off because they're just so, they're such amazing actors and they act off.
That's a new show. Let's pitch that show to Spike.
Act off.
Okay. Good. Sorry.
I'm done.
You can follow, American Ninja Warrior on NBC. No, I love that. But what's great about this is, you know, we have so much exposition to get out and so much, you know, so much to tell. And what better way to just talk? If you've got to get to a talky moment, let's talk it out with Alan Alda and James Spader. Let's talk it out with Fitch and Red.
Learn that he's sent many guys after him. That he's been trying for a long time to get rid of him. And that their agreement predates, or Berlin predates the agreement, whatever this actual agreement may be.
What was the line which I love so much that I didn't write it down, but it's like, what do you think he said? That's like, you sent a guy, like I sent many guys, or whatever it was. Like, I forget the exact exchange, but that was a great exchange there too. It really got the sense that this is also on some, you know, we're dealing in some level of super hyper geopolitical espionage on levels that, you know, far exceed, you know, what's going on in this country.
We touched upon that, I believe, in season one with a lot of the blacklisters. It seemed to hit upon that. You know, it was a lot, and a little bit in this one, but I don't think they've mentioned it in the same way that they did in season one, that a lot of the people that Red was going for.
Yeah.
You know, it's really more about the back channels, not like in the underbelly, but really like in the financial sector.
Sure.
You know, it really is all about that. I mean, I noticed that we had the financial minister from Russia in on something here too. So it really is, this really is more of corporate terrorism.
And it's cool because it presents this world where we know the world where, okay, we have nations, you know, Soviet Union, United States, and all these great nations. Mm-hmm. There's armies, and there's nuclear warheads, and there are battles, and there's you know, that stuff. But there's also this other world with this other, like, sort of geopolitical espionage world where things are done, you know, in super secret, you know, with the agreement of those same countries, sometimes behind the back of countries, and it's just sort of the thing that's done to keep order. And this is the world that Red and Fitch, the Decemberist, live in.
Yeah.
I also thought it was cool that Fitch had a nickname, even as Fitch. I mean, he's already Fitch, but he's got to be the Decemberist, too.
Decemberist.
And that's a pretty cool nickname, the Decemberist.
Well, we'd never really heard it in reference to anything else, so I guess it was just like his code name for that thing,
But he's really high up on the list.
He's 12.
He's 12.
So he existed beforehand, because he's already on the list.
Which, again, like, what the F is going on in this top 10?
Well, don't forget, we met him in the Arlo episode, right?
Yeah.
Around then.
Yeah.
And actually, what's interesting is, I believe, because that cube... Uh-huh. Was kind of like a flashback to that episode.
Where's Flippa? Flippa loves a cube.
Oh, yeah. That's the first thing
the FBI has a cube! Yeah. Oh, what are we going to do with a cube? I'm with the super secret FBI!
But I love...
That's my Joe Flippa.
But you missed the Italian accent that time.
Yeah. The cube! The cube! The pizza pie! The cube!
The cube!
I'm Joe Flippa.
I think even the Guthrie one, that was a high number on the blacklist too.
Yeah.
As well as Berlin.
Yeah.
You know, which were the ones that we've seen. We've only seen really Alda, I think, on the episodes with the really high numbers.
Well, sure. And
or low numbers. But again, it begs the question,
if Fitch was Fitch and he's so freaking super secret, the tip of the spear of this geopolitical espionage ring, and he's only number 12.
Yeah.
That makes us believe that maybe that group that he's involved with, that has to be the top 10 of the guys, right? And I'm still looking for my super blacklister, although I did predict Nansel Garrick that Alan Alda would be a super blacklister, and he didn't crack the top 10, so I guess I'm kind of wrong.
No, I say he's close enough. He's enough.
All right.
He's enough of one.
So I just want to say I had that right.
You could say you're right.
I might have
that's
that right.
That's okay.
What were you going to say, Jules?
I'm just trying to figure out the list. I'm always trying to figure out the list and the rankings of the list.
We need a master list.
And if...
Next to the relationship question, I think that's the next question afterwards. It's like, what's the order of this list?
We need to curate a list.
If this is Red's list, but he didn't know the Decemberist was the one who set him up all these years ago, why is he so high on Red's list?
Yeah. Or who's... Yeah, what's, is he on... Is that
if
Red's
it's
list?
Red's
or
list.
Or is it just the list?
I don't know. I mean... It's somebody's list because they're ranked. So I'm just wondering how he
I need some answers on this list. I need some answers on this
list. I need some answers.
Help us out, YouTube, internet, iTunes. I do want to take a moment right now and thank you all for listening to us on iTunes and downloading us on iTunes and rating us. A lot of people came through this last couple of weeks and rated us and commented. We really appreciate that. Actually, really helps us a lot when that happens because it helps other people find us on iTunes, people who consume it as a podcast, people who listen to it while jogging or at work or whatever they're doing. That helps other people find the show. So please go on iTunes and rate it and comment. And we appreciate those who did that. And then as for YouTube, we love you guys. Thank you very much.
YouTube,
we're going to do some shout outs.
Crazy.
Yeah, YouTube, you know.
YouTube went awesome. I loved
Amir.
I loved it.
And so we'll do some shout outs a little later on.
I got YouTube right now. I can pull up iTunes later if you want. You want to do.
Yeah, I can do iTunes. We're going to do it now?
Yeah.
Let's do it now.
Why not?
Okay, let's do it now.
Let's just get it out of the way.
Why not?
All right, so YouTube. Gabriel Barreto. I'm going to mess up a lot of these names, I know.
Let's
Sabrina Garrett. That's Zone Fighter 1, as I mentioned before. The ZF1. Sunshine 1032. Sherry Odette. M. Wharton 28. Beta Artemis. Life is Short 214. Janice Klein. Hestia. I cannot say your last name.
Pertium.
Pertium. Who also was one of the ones who said the connection about Berlin's daughter.
Yes.
As she reminded me as well. Gio Manash. Melky Oliver. Dave 1555. Joyce 51. D. Swopes. Vtuki 81. Alice K. MDS 1978. Marima Tropojoja. Tropoja. Marima Tropoja. J Mo, Isaiah Gamble, and that's it. That's a lot. That's good. Thank you so much, everybody.
These are awesome.
Thank you.
We got a bunch of likes and everything. It was awesome.
Yeah, and we did Hestia, we of course did read all everything you posted, so thank you very much for that. And we'll get to the iTunes folks shortly.
Oh, you don't have it. Okay, we'll do it later.
Oh, I got it. We'll but I'm you know, the show, we're in the middle of our show, so I'll get it later.
All right, let's get it later.
Okay, but I will
But
do
thank
it.
You. That's how much we care about you guys. We're willing to stop the show
to
talk.
We'll stop the show.
We'll stop the show to give you guys some credits.
Thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Thanks for comments.
Can I sidetrack while we're in the middle of sidetracking? My favorite part of this episode made no sense to me whatsoever. YouTube can even. What was that scene when Lizzie went to meet Red? And you had the guy with the headphones who was interrogating the old guy.
Yeah.
Who's talking like this.
Yeah, yeah.
Like Martin Short Brimley, I think his name was.
Yeah, he made that. We've seen him before. That's his shakedown guy. That's Red's interrogation guy.
I couldn't remember that for some reason.
We've seen him once, at least once, maybe twice before. Red's interrogation guy. He uses various methods. One of the methods he uses is blasting music, and we've seen all kinds of other gross stuff. It's left to our imagination what he's doing.
I guess I didn't, but I love it. I'm going to need lunch. Tuna on rye, coleslaw if they have it.
I love it. It's just another character that populates Red's world, along with Mr. Kaplan, along with Dimbe, along with all the different folks. That's why I thought that's what I was referencing. I thought the florist was one of those people.
I thought so too.
You know, it was a real florist.
It was a real florist. FTD.
Yeah. But
anyway, go ahead.
Anyway,
I didn't want to forget that because I thought it was such an awesome scene.
It was an awesome scene.
But it makes no sense in the scope of the whole thing other than just she met Red.
It was also just to let people remember and know that Red has all these folks.
This crazy network of colorful characters.
Forgive me. That was awesome. Anyway, go ahead. Let's go back to the real stuff.
Yes. Finch. Yeah, so we're talking, the super blacklisters were there. So, then we, you know, after that confrontation, Fitch is apprehended by the Russians, mm-hmm. and then
saw that from a mile away.
Yes, we all saw that coming.
Of course,
don't get in that SUV. Don't do it.
Yep.
Don't do it.
He got a really cool neck collar placed on it.
A neck collar.
I thought that was kind of cool because I kind of thought he was going to make it out of there. Well, after a certain point, I knew he wasn't going to make it out. But once I saw the neck bomb collar, I'm so conditioned to saying, they're going to defuse that bad boy. cut the red wire. Like, you know, this is done. And the fact that they put him in the super secret shield that Joe loves.
Yeah.
And
what the hell was that room that they saved them from? Because it looked like they were doing some, like, people had weird outfits on.
Yeah, I actually have a question about, I have many questions about that room and the outfits they were wearing. And then there was this really interesting shot that I feel like they went out of their way to show of Fitch when he's wearing the collar to look down at this bloody body part, and it's this big dragon tattoo on a leg.
I
just felt like... Why throw that in there if that's not?
I thought that was really out of.
I like, paused it, was looking at it, trying to figure out what the heck it was, and I got no answer for that. So
I just sort of read that. Well, I don't have a specific answer. I just sort of read that as just some crazy Russian mob. I thought some sort of Russian.
Oh, like they have a multiple operation. Hey, you know, we got some cutbacks, so we're going to have to use a safe house and the meth lab in the same place, right?
I don't know. I mean,
you know,
I was really...
So sorry, but, you know, we're limiting our operations and...
Okay, well, I don't know. They did go all the way to show that shot.
I just feel like they show everything for a reason, and that was like a definite
Fitch looking down
at that shot, and then them sort of panning up that leg, and then they cut to commercial.
Yeah. I agree.
It was just
my assumption that was just, you know, an indication of who had him and the bloodbath that ensued.
Okay.
So I could be wrong, though. I don't know. What do I know? So they get into the place. They work on the thing. It has an RF sensor on it, which means it can be triggered remotely. Mm-hmm. They blocked off the RF sensor. That triggered a timer. So it could go off in 1 minute. It could go off in an hour and no one knew. Mm-hmm. And then we get that wonderful, wonderful scene with Alan Alda talking to the guy who's trying to work this out, where he says, you know, do you have a family? And he kind of goes through. And it really sort of humanized Fitch because, you know, he was, I mean... We don't know that Fitch is very. What's the question to you? Was Fitch a bad guy? Is Fitch a bad guy in your opinion? I mean, Fitch has obviously done some bad stuff. He's killed a lot of people, but then so has Red. This is what we're doing. And so Fitch thinks everything he's done is necessary. Hmm. He's doing business with all these nefarious characters. But I don't know. Is he a bad guy?
Well, I think there's obviously a lot more to him than meets the eye, and I feel like he's in big dealings that Red knows about, which is why he's gone out of his way to get rid of Red in the past. But on a human level, he has been responsible for 760 deaths, and that absolutely weighs on him. He has a wife that he's been married to for, 51 years, they said?
Yep.
Yeah.
Something like that.
They just celebrated 51 years.
So there's more to him than meets the eye. There's something going on in his super... friends.
I don't think he's ever really come across as evil. I mean, he's obviously come across as someone with different interests than Red. And if anything, he seems to be a bit of a mediator.
Well,
you know, trying to controlling everyone else at bay. First of all, I don't think we ever knew his position as Assistant Director of National Intelligence.
Yeah. Is that a real position?
You know, I didn't have a chance to look it up, but I was thinking the same thing.
He's not the director of the CIA. He's not the director of the NSA.
Well,
he's not the director of any specific agency.
I don't think he's
just National Intelligence.
Well, I don't think he's going to have a position where we're going to see in the news.
Right.
But you know, could be a legit one. I don't know. But you know, he does seem to have a lot of responsibility, and I'm sure it weighs down on him. And no bad guy ever thinks he's just being evil. He thinks he's doing something for his own good.
Well, my question is because he's number 12 on the blacklist, which is full of evil folks. So.
But that doesn't mean the folks on the blacklist, well, I hate to say this, it doesn't mean that they're evil. It just means that Red has a vendetta against them, or there's some kind of conflict with Red.
Well, they aren't supposed to be the FBI's most wanted.
Yeah, the blacklist isn't exclusive to Red. The blacklist are people who are on the FBI's most wanted, mm-hmm. who Red can get to.
Although, the Decemberists, they
Wouldn't
said...
Wouldn't it be funny if Red was number one on the blacklist?
They said that...
That would be funny. That's a good one. I like that one.
I like that.
Oh, that is good.
Look at you.
Oh. I'll give you that.
Okay.
She's
giving me something. Everybody, she's giving me something.
All right.
But what they did say when I forget what that woman's position is who, like, put the kibosh on going after the Decemberists.
I'll be Assistant Deputy Director of the Attorney General.
His acts brought an end to communism and was considered an act of patriotism.
Yeah.
So they kind of liked the Decemberists.
Yeah, I mean, it's complicated.
Is he on the FBI's most wanted?
No,
this is
where it's complicated. But I'm saying all this to say that there was a bit of that scene was there's a bit of sort of confession, like a moral confession.
Yes.
Like, and you see some humanity in this guy. Like there's sort of a look on his face. Like, I've done a lot of bad ish over the years, and I've seen a lot of guys to their death. I always have to talk to their family. 700, how many was it?
763.
763 families have had a top two.
Well, when you think about it, these people who are suits and they make the big decisions, right, they are above us small people. They're like gods on Mount Olympus. The decisions they make affect people every single day.
Right.
And I think, if anything, that kind of a scene, him seeing, you know, what is in store for him, that he's knowing there's really very little to no hope at all, it brings him back to his own mortality, and he realizes, you know what, in the end, I'm just like one of these folks, only I have all these decisions that I've made, and I get to live with them.
And not only that, like, he, you know, he doesn't come off as this sort of like, it's all about me sort of guy, because he looks at this young guy as like, go home. I won't have it on my conscience. I won't make it 760,
which
know,
is
whatever.
Great. I will redeem myself with this one person at least, and not have this person, you know, maybe, I guess his reference too is I had 760 something people die.
Right.
So that I could live, or said I, you know, just to support my lifestyle, support what it is I'm doing.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna risk one more life just to try and save me.
Yeah, which was great.
Yeah.
So so he leaves. Red comes in. Yeah. He sort of says, you know, look, you're gonna die. And Red just gives it to him straight. It's like, you're not gonna make it. So spill it, you know. but it was very sort of like too old. I mean, it wasn't very much like F you, Fitch. It was like, let's talk this out. And he just spilled it. He's like, look, Red. You know, the guys, the people are way more conservative than me. When I'm gone, they're going to come after you. Like, do you really have the evidence against us? We're going to need proof of that evidence. We're going to need proof of that stuff. You need to check out my, was my locker, my safe deposit box? What was it?
A safe.
In St. Petersburg,
on the second floor of...
It's about the wall, second floor.
Yeah.
Yes. Bye, Fitch.
But he got enough information.
Well, that's a start.
But he got the combination. He got the St. Petersburg.
Yeah,
that's really enough. But man, I didn't see that coming. By the way, I knew that it was happening. That was definitely a jumping. I feel like I don't jump on network TV much. But I jumped.
Very gory.
Well, fleshy.
Yeah. Very fleshy.
And then very fleshy. And I'm like, that's so gross for network TV. Then I remember we knew Hannibal. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like an opening sequence in half Hannibal. That's like the first 30 seconds of every Hannibal episode.
But let's
I was like, oh okay, well that's okay.
But let's just make sure. So he talks about, he says the moderates were already outnumbered. Yep. So pretty much saying he was a moderate, I believe, by that line.
Yes.
The closer we get to 2017, the more radicalized they'll become.
Yes.
Yep.
So that also makes me think that whatever John Blomkamp's ideas are, that he's thinking ahead to 2017.
Yeah.
So that kind of gives me like, oh, he's got a 3-year plan going on
here. He's doing like our other showrunner, our favorite showrunner, Brian Fuller, who planned out seven seasons.
I think that's really interesting to see that he kind of mentions 2017. So it's almost like he has it planned out,
He's like, did you hear that, NBC? I got 3 years of story to tell.
We're the number one new drama on NBC from last year. We got to stay on. And then talk to Mitchell and Hobbs. They might be persuaded.
Yep.
So I'm guessing we'll see those two somewhere in the future. And Jasper
Top 10 blacklisters for sure.
Maybe, yeah.
Top 10 blacklists.
Jasper size with the Chinese. Those were the big nuggets we got besides the safe.
Yeah.
And the combination. Yeah.
Great. And then explosion.
Yeah, an explosion.
So that was an... man, who's cleaning up that box? That's all I want to know. It's a tough.
So, Aram.
And yeah, poor Aram. And then after that, we didn't touch on, you know, the deal that Red made with Berlin's daughter in order to get... You know, she sent Berlin to his daughter to Berlin and in order to get that access.
That's Berlin. Well, she sent her to Berlin to get and then give her a passport to go someplace else.
Yeah, I gotta say, it kind of, even though Berlin is super evil bad guy, kind of broke my heart for him.
Yeah.
It's like, she doesn't want you, Dad.
No, she doesn't want you.
Too late, buddy.
Sorry, evil She's has out. Its price.
And for him to give like the passport and everything in front of Berlin, that was just added.
It broke my heart.
Yeah.
For a guy I've hated this entire season. Couldn't wait for his demise.
There you go. So that was it. But really, also, I did enjoy. I referenced it earlier. The sort of the sit down where Red sort of sits there. You know, he's going to kill him, and he pulls out the good vodka, and just two old adversaries.
It was a bit of a celebration, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, a little cherry on top to finish off this epic journey, multi-decade journey that they've had together.
And what's interesting about that is it's almost like Red said, "Look, dude, you had the wrong guy. I wasn't the guy you wanted." So you killed all these people, you did all this stuff, you know, for, you know, to get me, and this was all wrong. So I would let you go, but you kind of effed up. You killed Malik, you crippled Cooper, you did all kinds of other heinous things to people, so you kind of got to go. But let's drink some vodka on the way out.
Well, it was a respectful death.
Yeah, it was very respectful. They killed the whole bottle. I thought they'd just do one shot. They killed the whole bottle.
Oh, no, he's Russian.
That's true. Well, yeah, so that was very well played and very interesting. And he got to do most of the talking there and got to enjoy some stuff. And there's a couple of really cool shots with sort of Dimbe in the background. Mm-hmm. It was really well lit. And it was just dope. It was
very
just really well done.
Very pretty shot glasses, too.
Yeah, very pretty. Yeah, very these ornate, like, wonderful shot glasses. Mm-hmm. The whole thing was great.
Classy death.
So that happened. And then, of course, the last thing we talked about is your favorite thing, Nando, is the Tom Keene Red.
Why is that
confrontation?
My favorite thing?
Oh, no, okay. You mentioned it was a good scene. It was also a great scene.
Yeah, it was a great scene.
Of the two of them. And we got that info, which you already touched on, which is basically that, you know, Tom has been working with Red in some capacity, which we have to figure out. Mm-hmm. Red was very clear you're not to see her anymore.
I don't know if it means they're working together, but it definitely means they have a relationship of some sort. So I'm guessing
they never told him about us. It was very like, you know, we're having an affair.
Maybe they were lovers.
Oh. And it was very much, you know, I never told her about us. But, you know, I don't know. But all in all.
And if you remember, we never, and I could be wrong, did we ever solve who Apple Eating Guy was?
I think we did. Right, Nando?
Yeah, well, I think it wasn't really a major, I don't know.
It was major in season one.
But it was an extension of Berlin. It was also.
It was an extension of Berlin.
I think it was an extension of Tom. It was also all leading, all roads, okay. All those roads
just
in season one led to Berlin.
Okay. Yeah.
And the reason why they led to Berlin, because Berlin was after Red for all the heinous things he did to his daughter.
Fair enough.
And then, of course, that was Fitch who did the heinous thing. So all that, everything from season one, all those things leading up to now, including Tom, including, you know, Tom being placed with Lizzie, including all that stuff, was all summed up in Fitch dying and Berlin dying.
Yeah,
so
true.
It was pretty tidy little bow. We've just got a lot of new things to explore.
Like who's Red going for next? And I guess he's still hunting for his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about what's left.
What are we going to see in January? Yeah. Not really predictions, but what's, you know, we have all this new information.
Yeah.
All this new information that Fitch gave him. So we have Red's going to be on the case of that. But how is the relationship to the FBI and Red now?
Mm.
Like, and how is this reconciled, and what's Red, you know, Red's going to be giving, it's the same relationship. Red will be giving them, you know, lower people on the blacklist in order to help him find the people on Fitch's list?
This is kind of prediction-y, but that's fine. I think we'll sort of just talk it out right
talk
now.
It out. Let's talk it out.
So Fitch did say that my death will trigger a series of events. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see those events start to take place.
Red's,
I think that's going to be a big part of part two of the season.
I think Red's going to be on the defensive a bit, probably. Yeah. Just because, again, this is going to really impact everybody on the blacklist, even the task force, because they're working with Red.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So they might be, who knows, they might be at odds again. We saw a little bit of that last season when Fitch was able to save them.
Right.
But, yeah, maybe the task force could possibly dissolve, which is possible. And then, you know what? And then Samari might end up being, they might, well, who knows? Yeah. Well, yeah, maybe Mossad will pick them up or at least give them some kind of support.
We also did see, if that does happen, we saw Harold Cooper sort of bend the rules a little bit this episode.
Yeah, a couple times.
Also, that's another thing that I think we'll see in the second half of this season is whatever that disease or whatever's going on with Harold Cooper that Red touched on, the test results.
Oh, yeah, the test results. Oh, yeah.
You know, so
and
I
the
think,
wife.
And the wife. So I think we're going to get into that a little bit as well.
Yeah. Caroline, was her name? What's the wife's name? I can't remember. Okay, who we predict is not going to make it, so we gotta hold to that.
I'm sticking with that too.
Okay. Whatever, she'll pop up again, she ain't going to make it.
She'll be with the pills.
Well, kudos, man. Kudos to Blacklist for a successful first. Fall finale.
It's my
top two.
I still love
the I love the pilot. You know, and I love this. Mm-hmm. I actually love Ansel Garrick Part 2, too. Like the Joe Carnahan directed stuff is really, they're really crackerjacky and really feel very cinematic.
For sure.
Let me jump into, we'll get some very specific predictions in a second. Let me just jump into some more shout outs here. I'm transitioning to those. So, all of our iTunes people.
Yes.
By Winging It, thank you very much. Bale Wolfie. Fidrich Fan. BB Baggins, as in Bilbo Baggins. BB Baggins 82, mm-hmm. Bay Fan 74, JR Raz, Mary Ann W, Miss Hoffman, Joy Ramirez, K Randall, B Min NY, Love Justified, Viper Mans 1980.
I did better than you on these things.
What? What do you mean?
I feel like you're, well, I don't know. Go ahead.
What do you mean it better to me?
I mean,
what happened?
Oh. Yeah, name-wise.
Well, I mean, it's iTunes. It's a lot of, like, phonetically numbered things. Okay. Like, you know, like GR8. Great. I don't know. Right.
So, just a little house cleaning really quick.
Yes.
So, Blacklist returns with the Super Bowl episode. So, we'll be covering that, I guess, on February 2nd. We'll know more closer to. And then Blacklist returns on Thursdays in the fall.
On Thursdays.
So, we're not going to have this shift, most likely. We'll probably be doing something closer to
Thursday. Well, we got a couple months, but we'll definitely let you guys know when that's coming back. But just know that when the Blacklist happens, we'll be either on that day or the day after that.
Yeah.
Man, it's a bummer that Joe Flippo's not here for this last bit, but we have plenty of time for the Yellow Blouse, folks. Don't worry. Fear not. 2015 will be the year of the Yellow Blouse, and Joe Flippo will be back. Julia Carely, where can we find you?
Find me on Instagram and on Twitter with my name, Julia Carely, JULIACEARLEY.
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Nandovel, NANDOVEL, and here for Talking Dead, not Talking Dead, Walking Dead, and Scorpion, and Homeland.
Hardwick, is that you?
we also show
Joe Flippo, you can find him on Instagram and Twitter at Joe Flippo, and his website is josephsamflippo.com. I'm Joe Braswell. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Joe K. Braswell. Thank you so much for joining us for this first few episodes. Have a wonderful holidays and enjoy this time off. And we'll be back to bug you more February 1st or 2nd after the Super Bowl. We'll see you then. Thanks a lot, guys.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.